If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Ruth Norbury is a Swansea-based embroidery artist whose hand-embroidered mixed-media pieces explore themes including urban decay, loneliness, and post-apocalyptic settings. Ruth's journey has been an amazing one to become an artist. It's been a lifelong passion of hers, needlework. And in this second part of our conversation, as well as talking about her favourite band, her favourite book, her favourite film, we also touch on Ruth's personal insecurities about moving forward as an artist. And it's a really interesting insight into someone who, despite feeling as though she's not good enough to put the work out there, is pushing past her own boundaries. We have this conversation at a pivotal moment where Ruth actually submitted some work for a group exhibition for the first time. And it's great to talk through those feelings, the feelings of doubt that we all have when we put ourselves out there, and how Ruth is not only facing those fears head on, but moving through them slowly but surely. It's a little bit of a therapy session, but nothing too major in this episode. But it's just great to chat to Ruth, and I'm so proud that she's moving forward with this work that is clearly the work she's been put here to do. I hope you enjoy the show. If you do like the show, be sure to listen to the first part of our conversation if you haven't already. Tune in next week for a conversation with a different artist. And if you have the time to leave a review on your favourite podcasting platform, well, that would be swell. I'll see you next time. Enjoy the show. I can remember, so me and my wife moved to Cheshire the week before lockdown, March 2020. So we moved here and then we didn't really know anybody and it was just us and the kids in the house and stuff. But one of the things I can really remember was going for a walk in the woods, and because nobody, no planes were flying, any of that sort of stuff, like the birds, I can just remember birds going absolutely nuts, though, just like being, yeah. And it was that feeling of like the world had fundamentally changed, you know, and you'd hear the stories of like the canals in Venice, people seeing like fish swimming through them and all those sorts of things. And in a way, there's a beauty to be found in all that, isn't there? Because you're like, oh, we've managed to unscrew up what humans have kind of screwed up. And I guess maybe that's part of the thing that you're exploring as well.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, I try, obviously it's not that easy, but you try and minimize the impacts that you have on the world. Mm-hmm. So pretty much everything that I use in my work is all from a charity shop. It's all clean, I hasten to add. But, it, you know, you just don't want to kind of make the problems worse. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be part of why this work is based around a lot of these themes, is that you can feel like you're not alone. Of course you're not, but it's very easy to go out and do all of these things and buy, you know, I'd much rather go off to, I don't know, Pobbycraft or other shops are available or wherever, and just blow all the money on random miscellaneous embroidery stuff. But I don't do it because I don't want to. Mm. You know, you go and buy your vegetables in the market and try and, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be all something I'm not, but.
You're allowed to speak your truth though, because I'm in the same boat. Like me and my wife, like, I like sometimes to be able to go and talk about potatoes to a person that's grown the potatoes I'm about to eat, you know? it's much nicer. There's a little bit of, it is amazing. There's never been a better time to be alive in terms of choice. But sometimes when you buy some figs and you realize they come from Madagascar about 2 weeks ago, there's something there that just feels maybe it's not quite the way it ought to be.
Exactly. Yes. That whole thing that I don't know if this is true, but somebody once told me that asparagus was used to be available for 2 weeks a year. Now you can probably buy it all year.
Yeah.
And your strawberries in January, and you think, no.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Strawberries
for
supper.
It seems kind of cool to be like, hey, we managed to get strawberries from the other side of the world. But actually, you're like, yeah, just because we can do that, should we do that? I agree with you. It's like, that's why satsumas are important at Christmas, because you can't get them. You know, that was like a kind of novelty thing, wasn't it? And now you just get easy peelers. Don't get me started on easy peelers. Like, they're not even satsumas. They're just called easy peelers. It's like they've been bred to be easily peeled.
Yeah, we can't say satsumas anymore. Someone's probably copyrighted it and trademarked it or whatever.
But I think there's a thing. It's almost like there's a nostalgia. I was thinking about the arts and crafts movement for a second there, and about how, like, you know, that was all about reinforcing the importance of nature and, you know, reminding us of our place in the world. And I suppose there's a certain resonance with what you're saying about that.
Mm. Like, I mean, for example, you could go to the library and you could pick up a book, for example, and you take it home, you read your book. Or you could get your Kindle out, give the book 5 minutes. Oh, I can't be bothered, because you've got access to most of the books in the world, probably. And you think, you don't give something the chance anymore, because you can't then go back to the library until tomorrow. You either stick out the book that might be a bit duff and you carry on with it, or rather than just what we call, it's become a thing now, that the 20-minute rule. If you're watching a film and you realize you're saying this, and you think the 20-minute rule is, if neither of us enjoying this after 20 minutes, off it goes.
Mm.
Whereas you used to go down to the video shop and you'd come back with your video in hand and your cake or whatever it was, your takeaway, and ha-ha, you've got your evening planned out. And it might not be the best film in the world, but it's the one you've got.
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain sort of calm that comes from that, rather than, let's get on Netflix or Amazon or whatever, and no, I'm not enjoying that. Oh, no, what about this? Oh, I could choose from any of these thousands of programs. Oh, I don't know which one to choose. Will it be the best one? Will it be great?
Mm. Do you find life overwhelming?
Yes, a lot of it, yes. Yes. But it's very easy to get sucked into the having all of these things. So we've cancelled any of the kind of Netflixy subscriptions and that kind of stuff for that very reason. But it's quite difficult to then go into a charity shop and buy a weird DVD and go, oh, it's not very good, really. Never mind. Because you've then had the experience of Netflix. Oh, it's just got everything.
Mm.
And it's difficult to go back sometimes.
But do you find then that the inherently analog slowness of doing needlework is a good therapeutic tool, kind of?
Yes, definitely. And then, of course, you face the giant fear of taking this beautiful, this pristine piece of embroidery and then throwing ink all over it. You've got a week's worth of work sort of sat there going, hello, I'm all, you know, pristine, and I'm absolutely fine at the moment. There's nothing wrong with me. So why are you approaching me with a paintbrush full of black ink?
Yeah. How many times did you do that before you were like, all right, I feel like I'm confident enough to like throw stuff at this?
How many pieces have I made so far?
Okay. Yeah.
Now, the one I'm doing at the moment as well is particularly big, and that's not going to be a fun day. Well, it will, but it'll be a cup of tea and a biscuit before you start.
Because what you're doing is you're making a thing, and then you're really just like having to surrender this whole thing, aren't you? I was thinking about like when I interviewed Kaz Holmes and she was talking about working with found objects. You know, you start from this point of going, I don't really know what's going to happen, but I'm just going to go ahead with it anyway. With your work, obviously, you do know what's going to happen for the first half of it because of the precision of the stitching.
do you have an end point in mind, or is there a certain bit where it's just like free fall? You're going to go, right, we're just going to go in free fall now. Best of luck, everybody. Let's see what happens on the end.
It's a bit of both. It's best to have a kind of idea of what you want, but if you think about it too much, the ink doesn't listen and it always wanders off into places it's not supposed to be. So the only way I can think to get over it is to basically think, as I again say in things like videos and stuff, is that there will be bits that go wrong. There will be bits where the ink wanders all in unintentional places, and in which case beads, sticky things, applique, cover it all up, it'll all be fine.
Right. Interesting, yeah. Because I guess that's it, isn't it? Is you can just keep layering and layering and layering until... Do you do that until you feel a point of satisfaction or a point where you're like, right, this is okay now?
Yes, yeah. Once you've covered up all the obvious whoopsies, then you're generally right. There's often... I quite like staircases and windows and things. And so you've got this like bright space to sort of draw the eye up to the window or whatever it is. And I don't know, half the time ink decides to just sort of leap from wherever it currently is into the window part. And it's very hard to go backwards and brighten up a window that's gone too dark. But the ink just, it loves windows, it would seem. It's the darker the ink, the better. It's like if you get the black ink out, it's like, right, I will leap this way.
And then, I mean, because sometimes you do things where you'll have like a building, but then you might have like some flowers in front of it or something. You do this bit of storytelling, don't you, that kind of adds an extra context. Is that a smart recovery tool? Is it because you're like, oh, right, I'm going to recover this. I'll put some daisies on it or something. Or is that always like part of the plan anyway?
It's generally part of the plan, but generally it's... It often has a certain element of that there, that you've stuck it up on the wall and gone, it's missing something. What's it missing? And you've just got these buildings in the background. Because again, I've got no art background. So you don't necessarily think logical thoughts about, I could do with having something in the foreground. I will have these big black buildings in the distance. And, oh, what am I going to do now? Because they look weird because they're big and black and imposing. But no, there's just nothing in between, you know, the horizon and me. So it'll sometimes be I'll just pop that one there to cover up the small whoops-a-daisies. And other times it's sort of, you know, right, what can I do? Right, I think this needs something to bring it forward. So layer up some bits in the foreground. So a little bit of both, but yeah. Some of them are definite whoopsie-daisy coverers.
But then, well, A, that's part of the joy, I think. And then probably you're the only person who knows they're whoopsie-daisies, right?
Probably, yes. And if I kept my big mouth shut, it would be all right.
So listen, my wife, I know she doesn't listen to this podcast because she's tired enough of listening to me anyway. She's got a great habit of whenever we make dinner, particularly if we're having dinner with some guests around, that as she's putting the dinner on the table, she'll do this thing where she tells people where it's gone a little bit wrong. And I'm always like, stop doing that, because people are going to enjoy this because it's a home-cooked meal. And she'd be like, I don't think there's enough salt in there. And you're like, well, now I think that as well. Thanks very much. Do you know what I mean? Do you have a habit? Feels like you've got a bit of a habit of that, of kind of going,
Oh, very much so. Would you like to buy this? Oh, don't look at this bit. Oh, that's, oh, no, that's, it. Oh, dear, no. On the frame, oh, darling, no, I couldn't possibly. Yes. I have to, pretty much fingers on lips and go, would you like it?
I like it. I feel like you should almost, you know, like sometimes you'd get, I don't know, almost like this layer. You should have a cover over layer where you can go, this is Ruth's narrative. These are all the bits. And then people can peel that off and be like, look at the marvellousness that I can't see. You know? What's it? Just comes. It's like a director's commentary, something like that on a DVD, isn't it?
Do you know, I once, my mother-in-law used to run an exhibition which she used to kindly allow me to put some embroideries in. And I was walking up behind her and I was like, gosh, she's so good at selling stuff. I wonder what it is she's selling at the moment. And she was in this huge sort of like, oh, wonderful, you know, spiel of things. And I went up and peered and I was like, that's one of my embroideries. This is good, this is. Whereas I'd be like, here's a bird, chaffinch. Oh, is it chaffinch? Yeah, definitely chaffinch, yeah. It's on a stick. Do you want it?
That's interesting. She's a good storyteller.
I don't know, well, because her husband's a sculptor, so I think she spent a lot of time being good at bigging up the things that people wanted to hear. And that's not me at all.
Right.
And I have a, for example, photographing my embroidery is the thing I hate the most, and writing up the bits about it. Mm-hmm. And it should be the big sort of triumphant finish of, you know, like, I'm going to make sure this photograph is absolutely brilliant. Mm. It's going to be the best. And the description, oh, it's going to blow people's minds. And I generally I can't take it much further than, well, it doesn't look terrible, and that'll do as a description. And I know that's ridiculous, because I put all the effort into making it look nice, and then go, yeah, slightly dodgy photo. And everyone goes, well, it looks so much better in real life. Like, I know.
That's interesting, though, isn't it? Because the naming of things and the describing things is quite hard. I sometimes wonder whether you need to lean into that, you know, and just be like, this piece is called Well Now. You know what I mean? Like, always be going, this piece is called, look at that. Would you look at that? And everybody else would just think it's like a cathedral that's been bombed. But you'll be like, yeah, that's what it's called. Isn't it? Would you ever consider writing the descriptions like before you start, or maybe before you start throwing the ink on things? Is there a bit where you could go, this is what this ought to be called, before you have to start apologizing?
It's probably a good idea. Yeah,
be an interesting experiment. Yeah. Wouldn't it, if you wrote it down, you know, as you start stitching, and when the ideas are clearly, because you're just in that slow stitching kind of meditative space, write them down there, and then at the end of the process see how closely that fits, considering you've thrown caution to the wind at some point.
That's probably a good idea, in fairness. I don't know. Oh no, that bit was terrible. Oh no, don't look at that. Wonder there, there's an awful bit. There's a huge splodge there. That does make it sound like I have no clue what I'm doing, but it's not all covering up the boo-boos. It's not all that bad.
No, that's what I mean. I think it's amazing. It's just quite interesting to see. There's almost like this, I don't know what it is, and I don't want to sound like I'm speaking out of turn, but it's almost like you refusing to believe that this piece of work is kind of amazing. Like, some people would, you know, some people talk about amazing chaos or whatever, and you're like, you're not letting yourself do that.
Mm. Oh, no, I'm terrible at that. Yes, I have. There's an exhibition in Swansea every year of local artists. And you all, it's quite a big thing in the Glyn-Vivian Gallery. It's quite a big deal. And I've never plucked up the courage to do it until this year. Mm-hmm. And I've been sewing for 22 years, living almost in Swansea that entire time. Well, living in Swansea for almost that time, rather than almost in Swansea.
Almost living.
Yes, I live near Swansea, sort of. And this year was the first time I did it. And as soon as I walked in there, I nearly threw up on the desk with my work. Mm-hmm. Handed it over. And she said, oh, just take it in with the others. And I walked in and I was like, oh, what have you done? These people are going to think you're such an idiot. Yeah. Because now I can't see past my... See what I was saying before about my own mind getting in the way? It is just... Mm. There, it's like a little monster on my desk that goes, you're rubbish, all the time. Yeah. Which is ridiculous, because I mean, that's just sort of like my ego, but kind of the other way around, you know, like telling you that you're, you know, yeah, anyway.
Right, so I don't know if I've said this before, but there's a guy called Seth Godin. He wrote a book called The Icarus Deception, which is this idea that, like, the story of Icarus is, you know, you fly too close to the sun, you're going to fall apart. It's all going to go pear-shaped. And he says that's a deception. And part of his principle is, when your ego is telling you that you're failing and that you've never been such a big disaster because of what you're about to do, that's the point when you're growing the most, because that's why those voices are there and why they're shouting at you. So that's huge to go and do a when I first did stitching, this photo, I think somewhere I did some cross stitches that were based on like song lyrics, and they were super basic. This was like 2006, something like that. And I remember sticking them on the wall of a little exhibition that was in my town, and then pretty much hiding in a corner of the opposite side of the hallway, just waiting for people to shit themselves laughing so much at them, you know? And we've all been there, and it's all part of the process. But the thing is now you've done it. And you didn't throw up. So it's like the next time around, you'll want to throw up marginally less. But I bet, I mean...
Yay!
Did you? Yeah, right. Go for throwing ups.
I mean, go me!
So then, I mean, how do you feel about the feedback that you get with your work then?
honestly, that people are kind of just being nice to me. You've got to be nice to me because I'm here, kind of thing. No. Which I know is ridiculous. I do, really, I know it. But, yeah, it's that sort of not paralyzing level of self-criticism and doubt, but not far away
Did you feel differently when you were doing birds?
Yes. Yeah. Have you ever thought about being a psychiatrist? Nailing these things.
But no, but again, like, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the birds isn't you putting your soul out there, but this other stuff is putting your soul out there. And so it just becomes really hard to accept that you're doing good stuff and that the feedback's all genuine, isn't it? It's quite classic responses, those, aren't they? To just go, no, that can't be true. Can't be true what they're saying.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, even the birds. I mean, the reason I got into doing birds is because I did an Aztec bird. It took me ages to find out how to do the feathers. And eventually I found a reasonable way of doing the feathers. So I did another one. And then I did another one. And I did another one. So that's the level of thought, was which bird today? Mm. That's pretty. Basically.
Yeah.
So, like you say, there was none of me in it, I suppose. So, you know, people would criticize them and things, and you wouldn't really care because you'd been there far before they had. I mean, I suppose that's the same with anything. You know, I get, I like frayed edges and things, and I've heard people, you know, like, oh, I couldn't live with those, I'd have to chop them off and things. And you're like, I've been worse to myself than you have, so you say what you want.
Yeah, then.
I haven't had much grief off the internet, so I mean,
If ever there was a place where you were going to get grief because your work was rubbish, it would be the internet. I think that's what's fascinating.
It would.
I think that you find your tribes, don't you? And you find the people who do like the kind of stuff and the people who can inspire you. I mean, when you did the exhibition, I mean, did you get any feedback from the work that you put up on display there?
I only did it a few days ago.
Okay.
I only found out yesterday I was in.
Wow. So we're literally going through this now. Man, I wonder.
Yeah.
That's super exciting.
Yeah, the feelings of nausea are really just subsiding.
That's the best, though. You know, like, I did a few years ago now, I was on, like, Radio 4, and that was something that was, like, really out of my comfort zone, doing, like, live radio. It'd been a long time since I'd done something that was that kind of uncomfortable. And it was, in a way, it was kind of cool because I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to need a big poo because I'm this terrified of what's about to happen, you know, have to have a word with myself and all those sorts of things. You know, it is really like you are really bloody living it now. Now that you're like a formally exhibited artist by putting the thing on the wall yourself and all that kind of stuff, you know, that's so good. It's so good. One day you'll look back and be like, do you remember when I nearly threw up on a desk at my first exhibition? You'd be like, and now I'm at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, talking like this for some reason.
I think, of course, yes, with a big feather in my hat.
There you go.
Yes. No, I mean, I do you know, once, three times I've tried to fill in the form before. Twice I chickened out because I knew they'd hate it. And once I couldn't afford the £8 entrance fee. We were that broke. So I was like, hey, right, I'm ready to do it. £8. Oh, well, next year.
I mean, the thing is now, though, is you've done it now. So, you've not spontaneously combusted. The world is still ticking over or whatever. So next year it will be a bit easier, won't it?
Oh, yeah. No, I'll be striding in next year.
I'm going
to
be...
trying to be sick on myself, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, that's so good. Yeah, honestly, I know it's like... And I'm really not trying to sound condescending, but what you've done is like really incredible. So it's kind of, because it's not easy getting past that stuff, and it's not easy putting yourself out there. Do you know what I mean? And what's great about your work, like I say, is it's really interesting. It's really dark. It's really depressing. It's really fascinating as a consequence of that. And I think that the fact that you've now got to this point of putting yourself out there is something you should be really chuffed with. And I'm not saying that to be nice. I'm saying that because that's like true. Because it's not easy. And you're doing it. So that's amazing.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I need to get over myself and just get on with it.
Get out of your own way and keep making them. Yeah, in some ways. Amazing. Right.
Exactly.
Let's take a breather and go on to some nice, easy topics, shall we? I feel like... Because that was good. I'm really good. That was amazing. Right, okay. Easy questions. Are you ready? Because this first question I'm going to ask you is going to lead to a whole nother conversation anyway. Do you have a favourite band?
I have several, but yes. Probably. I've had a lot of thinks about this question. I like to overthink things that are really important like this. Yes. My favourite band would be Rammstein, but then we went to see them in Cardiff recently and I realised everyone around me was about the same age or older than me, and I thought, oh, these people all look sort of quite old coming to this concert. And then I was like, oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, you're not 20 anymore, are you? They put it in the Millennium, is it the Millennium Stadium it is now, or whatever it's called, the big rugby stadium in Cardiff. Mm-hmm. And there were so many flames from the stage that many people, because it's right in the centre of Cardiff, many people rang up saying that the stadium was on fire. It wasn't. It was just Rammstein doing their thing.
God, I didn't realise they were still going. That's impressive. Because I used to be into like Guns N' Roses and stuff when I was a teenager. So never quite Rammstein, but definitely that kind of territory. But it's nice to know that they're still around.
Yes. Yeah. 61 and still performing. And he's got his own band now as well, Till Lindemann, the singer, under his own name, but it's basically Rammstein with a different name.
Because, yeah, it's fair to say you've got quite an aggressive musical taste, isn't it?
Yes. It's not the most aggressive, but it is pretty aggressive, yes.
It's pretty up there. Because, in a way, I'm glad as well. I can't believe you've chosen a band I've actually heard of, because at first I was like, Leah, I just don't know enough about metal. She's going to come out with something like Drainpipe Angst, and I'm going to be like, oh, yeah. Rainbow Banks.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got others for you if you want, but you've probably heard, well, no, some, you know, some of which you'll have heard of, some of which you haven't. Well, the Nine Inch Nails. I mean, most of my music sort of developed in sort of, roughly off at university, I suppose. But then more recently, Kombichrist, Eisbrecher, excuse my German, terrible pronunciation, Die Krebs, that kind of thing. All basically similar things. A lot of them are kind of musical for metal. They're not the really, really aggressive, discordant stuff, but I still enjoy that too. But they're not my favourite bands.
And you listen to that stuff when you're working, don't you?
Yeah, and sometimes it occurs to me that I'm merrily stitching thousands and thousands of stem stitches all next to each other, listening to this really like music.
And that, yeah, so I mean, is that the thing? Do you listen to the same music throughout a piece? Does the music change when you, because you, it's almost like you have got these two phases in your working practice, haven't you? You've got the stitching, you've got the chaos. Do you listen to the same music throughout? Do you think like, right, now I'm in the chaos zone, I need a bit of, I don't know, smooth jazz?
No, oddly, when it comes to chaos, it needs something proper meaty. It needs a good bit of aggression. That kind of bellowing along in the shower kind of tune. And then you kind of get all hyped up and ready and you're like, yes, I can do this. Pep talk. Yeah. when the actual stitch, you know, sometimes I'll watch things as well, but it's generally stuff about bad things that have happened. So it's not exactly like it's infused with cheery as I'm making them.
It's all about. I like that. Right, excellent. Okay, so do you have a favourite book?
I do, but it's another cheery tome. it's called Chernobyl, The History of a Tragedy by some... it's got a Russian name, and this is not going to be pretty, and I'm very sorry to them. Serhii Plokhsky, something like that, but probably nothing like that.
Did you watch?
Yes, so hence my phase of nuclear disaster pieces.
Did you watch the Chernobyl TV show?
Yes.
And did you feel like that was pretty accurate based on what you know?
It seemed to be a lot of good crossovers. Yeah, well, good. Terrible word to use in that circumstance, but you know what I mean. It did seem to be, but I wasn't exactly there with the book and the notebook and ticking facts off on the list. But
I thought it was.
I was trying to ignore it.
Yeah, I thought it was a great TV show. I didn't, because it's one of those things. It was a thing that happened that then kind of becomes a bit mythical, doesn't it? And I'm aware that like modern nuclear technology is actually pretty decent, but everyone still thinks we're going to just Chernobyl every single time, don't they? They just think it's all going to go a bit pear shaped.
Yeah, but then Fukushima was supposed to not go bang, wasn't it? And that did.
That's true.
Kind of.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you read a lot of books? Are you much of a reader? I feel like that would fit in with your ethos.
I go through phases of it. Yes, I go through phases of kind of doing crafty things in the evening, and then I'll read some things in the evening, and then I get like a terrible computer game and just be obsessive about that for a little while. Okay. And I'll be like, no, stop it. and then, yeah. So I try and do things that are a bit more less screen orientated, but it's, like I say, you go through phases of stop, don't be a bad girl.
Have you played The Last of Us?
No, but James has. My husband has. He plays a lot of video games.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like that's your landscape. There's a lot of that kind of stuff, isn't there? I've not even seen the TV show. I'm not sure I'm quite ready for that because I'm a bit of a big girl's blouse. So it's supposed to be a bit scary, isn't it? I'm not like...
It was good, yeah. Yeah, no, it was good.
Mm. I think I'll probably will get to it. But as I say, I'll probably more likely watch Bluey than that.
Yeah, I guess you don't get much opportunity for that kind of thing.
Not at the moment. That's a bit controversial. Children, this is a sort of death demon. You might like it. Just talk about it, show and tell. What was the last good film? Do you have a favourite film?
I do. And it's a film that makes me cry like a girl. It's a really strange thing. It's Into the Wild. And it's... about a chap who just pushes off into the middle of nowhere and with no money, no nothing, and just does his thing, Chris McCandless.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, I get torn basically between I know that I couldn't do it yet, but my soul, I think my inside somewhere, wants to just push off into the middle of nowhere and grow my own vegetables and live, you know, stick two fingers up to the world and disappear. But I'm not quite ready for that yet. We keep trying. We move house every now and again and try and move off into the middle of nowhere, and then we miss things and come back. That's what the boat was all about.
Yeah,
really,
I was going to say, yeah, you lived on a narrow boat. And I mean, in many ways, that's a pretty stripped back way of living.
No, definitely. And that happened because our next door neighbour, who was younger than us, was happily leading his normal life one day, and he just dropped dead down the stairs. And that was kind of like, right, well, if we're going to do something, perhaps we should do it now. Mm. So we did, but we, again, weren't quite ready. It's got a lovely combination of out in the middle of nowhere, but then you can sail off and be right in the middle of Birmingham. Mm. It doesn't necessarily travel all of the nicest parts of a city, should we say?
Yeah.
And they tell you, for example, when you move on to a boat, and this is not, I'm not saying this is the same for everybody because it had lots of lovely things about it, but they tell you to put a terrible lock on your canal boat, because at least when you get broken into, they won't do much damage. And somebody we were talking to had their generator stolen while they were using it, that kind of thing. But there's lots of lovely aspects to it. There's quite a sort of nice community, sort of slightly anti-authoritarian vibe to it. I probably shouldn't say this, but there's a guy who travels around making his own homebrew, and he sells you a milk bottle of whatever on earth it is. And you don't think he's entirely paying all the tax, shall we say, on the... alcohol in question.
What's great about the homebrew is not only does it get you drunk, but it'll bring your paintwork up a treat if you scrub the outside.
Absolutely. Yes, your vision deteriorates dramatically, but other than that.
Yeah, you're talking to your spirit guide, so you don't really mind. It all works out.
Exactly.
When my first stag do, I've been married twice, and I still am the second time. Don't know if that's the right phrasing, but I had a sort of stag do the first time around, and we just sat for 2 days by a canal lock, just watching the boats coming past and just being a bit drunk and a bit whatever. I always really liked just the canal vibe, because it's a funny thing, because it's like a segment of society that's different. You get your townies, you get your country folk, and you do get your canal folk, and they are definitely different, and they are a bit more like tuned in. I think because you're so close to the water, aren't you? Like, you look out your window and you're about 3 inches higher than the level of the canal a lot of the time and stuff, isn't it? It's a real...
Yeah. You wake up in the morning to what we used to call machine gun ducks, because right. They're pecking all the like the gunk off the outside of your boat, and you just hear digga 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 digga, and you're like, what the hell is that? What's gone wrong with it now?
Have you still got the boat, or did you kind of sell that?
No, we sold that. We bought it purely based on its name, which wasn't ideal, really. Completely heart over head purchase, and when we came to sell it, it was very obvious that it was a heart over head purchase, and the thing was somewhat mangled. But we didn't care, because it was called Warspite.
Nice.
And it turned out it was a former submarine. Apparently, during the British Navy were trying to get people to sign up, so they built 4 replica vehicles, I suppose. So basically, a modified submarine aircraft carrier, all these other things, I can't remember quite what, based around a narrowboat kind of hull. And ours was the submarine. Wow. Apparently. So it didn't look anything like a submarine afterwards, but was called Warspite, which is apparently a traditional Royal Navy name.
I had a really weird experience, I don't know when it was, like a couple of years ago. We were walking along the canal near here, and a boat came along that was called Flora. And Flora is the name of my oldest daughter. And for a laugh, we were like, because I've got 2 daughters and the other one's called Annie. And we were like, wouldn't it be funny? Imagine if a boat came along that was called Annie. It bloody did. The next boat that came along was called Annie. So we've got photos of the 2 of them in front of these boats. And I swear I spent the rest of the day, my head spinning out, just being like, why did she just happen then? Like, was that like some nexus of possibility or something? Because it was like, what are the chances of having 2 boats with your daughter's names anyway, let alone they just come along next to each other? Jesus.
That's mad, isn't it?
I love it. And
start wishing for £1 million or something.
I swear to God, we were like that. We were like, let's play the lottery ticket. I swear to God, that's true. No, I love narrow boats. I realise it's difficult for me because I'm quite large and narrow boats and me aren't great, you know, friends or whatever. But I love the typography on narrow boats, because it's kind of mostly got that kind of Grateful Dead kind of drop shadowy kind of vibe about it and all those sorts of things. I just love them. I think they're great.
Yeah, there was a lot of amazing things about it. I mean, just opening the doors and just seeing all the, you know, the beautiful scenery around you. It was really, really was lovely. And the, you know, the back to basics of, you know, washing your undies in a bucket with, you know, and collecting your own firewood and all that kind of stuff was a lovely, lovely thing. But I don't think quite ready. Give it a few years, maybe we'll be ready.
I mean, the good thing now is you can Uber Eats a McDonald's in a heartbeat. So
exactly.
Just come completely full circle, don't we? Right. Yeah. One more question then. What's an interesting fact about Ruth Norbury that nobody really knows?
Do you know, I struggled so much with this. Again, overthinking the important things in life. The only things I could come up with was I've just got a brown belt in karate, which very excited about. Being particularly quiet and shy as an individual and shouting in a room full of people, which you have to do quite a lot, or performing almost on your own, really not in my comfort zone at all. So that was reasonable. The only other thing I can think of is that I am currently in the process of writing some of my own music with an electric recorder in my own guitar work. But that's not really very interesting. I'm trying to, I can't think. People just know stuff about me.
Sorry, that is very interesting. I'll challenge you. So you're making your own music. That's cool. Is the music,
yes.
Is there any connection between the music and your art? Or are they very different?
There probably is, ultimately, yes. It's generally very cheerfully themed. Somebody said to me, "Oh, why didn't you make something about like the sea or something? You live in Swansea; it's right by the sea." And I'm like, "Oh, sirens—they kill people. Yeah, that'll do. I'll make it about sirens."
She goes there.
And then you sort of hear yourself, and you think, "What odd fish."
That's your art. That's your art. I love it. I can feel. I feel like if we spin forward, if we have a conversation in 2034, you'd have written this opera that goes along with these like 15-foot high pieces of work that you've made, where the blood splatters are real. No, not necessarily real, but no, I love that. And you do karate.
I'd love to do that. That would be something that would be epic, but I'd never have the balls to do it. Is to have like an old abandoned church and have a huge like exhibition in there. I think that'd be amazing. But
you've got the balls to do it. Do you know? Because the thing is like you spend all of your time fighting against your own insecurities and coming out the other side. So I just think you just got to stick at it. It might start off with like a small altar on the side of a tiny building or something, or maybe you'll just do it in a phone box that's disused in the first place. You know, start with small decay and work your way up to the grand scale.
Yeah, only a little bit of smelling of wee in the phone box.
Yeah. Maybe like an old shoe box that's in a puddle, and you're like, "Well, I'll put a bit of needlework in there first." And then when you've not thrown up on yourself over that one, then you can move on to the next thing. No, honestly, like you're.
Yeah, exactly that.
You're a lot greater than you give yourself credit for. And I think the fact that you're still doing it and the fact you're putting yourself out there is a testament to your resilience.
Well, you're very kind. I think there's this twisted bit of me that wants to continue with it, even when my brain's going, "Oh, I'm not very good at this."
Yeah, exactly.
The daily battle of my mind.
There you go. That's the artist. That's the war of art, I think, is what you get. Have you read The War of Art?
No.
Yeah, go and get it by Stephen Prestbury, I want to say. I'm pretty sure that entirely sums up the conflict that you're going through, because it's all about that. It's just about like the artistic way and the battles that you have to fight with yourself to get there, because you're fighting those battles and now you've got a brown belt in karate, so those battles days are numbered.
Exactly.
I love that. Hey Ruth, thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Thank you for having me. It's been lovely. Really nice to have a chat. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange. That's needl.exchange with any thoughts, comments, or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.